DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Joseph Capizzi, who's an associate professor of moral theology at the Catholic University of America. He's been a fellow at the Stockdale Center at the U.S. Naval Academy, a fellow at the Culture of Life Institute, the holder of the Cardinal's Chair at the International Forum, and an appointee by Governor Ehrlich to the Maryland Stem Cell Commission. He is widely published in academic and popular journals and a frequent contributor to the press. With Dr. Joseph Capizzi, we go inside the pages of A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Social Teaching, published by Catholic University of America Press. Joseph, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
It is like nothing else I've ever seen as far as its lifting up of Catholic social doctrine in such a easy way. And I don't think you've left any stone unturned in this particular area.
Well, thank you so much.
What's really excellent about this, Joseph, is that you compile great questions. I mean, questions that not only businessmen, but all of us who venture, particularly in our culture, have to navigate through. Help us to understand why Catholic social doctrine is a relevant voice that should be heard beyond the office of a Catholic businessman.
I think there's a couple of reasons. The first is simply that the Church is reminding us that we live our lives as moral beings. No matter what we're doing and where we're doing it, we are bound to the moral positions of the Church. We're bound to live well. And that's all found in Catholic social teaching. The interesting thing, one of the interesting things about Catholic social teaching is that it's not confined solely to economic issues. In fact, it's, you know, you find things about the family, you find things about marital relations, about children, about war. There's so much more that's contained in Catholic social teaching than I think people typically accept, that all of it is really directed to all of us, not just to business people, not just to laborers, not just to owners, but to all of us. And so often it's been ignored, quite frankly.
It seems as though many of these questions are ones that are, you would think that they would be basically understood by adult Catholics, but it seems as though we have, I'm trying to put this gently, but we seem to have failed to catechize even those foundational elements for those who are navigating as adults in our culture.
That's right. I think you hit the nail on the head. The failure here is a catechetical failure, or it's a failure of evangelization. And the book is merely a step in the direction of better catechesis, better conscience formation, better evangelization. All the stuff, all the questions, all the answers vary in terms of the levels of specificity. You get the kind of basic questions that you're referring to that just don't seem to know anymore, but then much more specific stuff. And that's just typical catechesis, right? You don't assume anyone knows the basics. You begin with the basics, and then you move to more specific issues. And that's really what you see in the questions that we got from people. These are not questions we came up with, by and large. These are questions we got from people. And they're all the right questions. And they do exhibit the shortcomings of our catechetical lives today in the Church.
That's why I think this book is so important, Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching, because the way you have set this up, Joseph, it is one of those things where people could look for a particular question and go and find the particular teaching that will anchor them. I mean, as I alluded to earlier, you draw from the teachings of popes, whether it's the very beloved Leo XIII to John Paul II, but also to those other issues. And that's really important for us to find the answers there, as opposed to hearing in the media commentators who have a platform on national radio or television who proclaim that they're Catholic. So they offer what they think Catholic social teaching is, couldn't be further from it. in some cases. And it can, I would imagine, make you, just as it does me, a little nuts sometimes to hear what they have to say.
That's right. One of the things that you learn from looking at these documents is how rich they are. There's so much more in them. I really recommend to any of your listeners that they go look, for instance, at Rerum Novarum. That's the first document in the tradition of Catholic social teaching. It's by Pope Leo XIII. Just look at it, and it's a brilliant document. There's so much more in there than any of us could ever anticipate, and a lot of it is challenging. I think one of our failings as people, perhaps it's a kind of American problem, is to be challenged by something, not simply to react defensively against it. There are some things in these teachings that will challenge us, but most commentators on it seem not to be challenged by them. Instead, as you sort of suggested, like present them as sort of slotting neatly into American political categories. They don't. They weren't written for Americans. They weren't written by and large by Americans, but they're written from the spirit of the Church herself. And they ought to be things that, on the one hand, challenge us, on the other hand, lead us toward improvement, lead us toward salvation, ultimately.
Well, there's a conservative talk show host that has taken some of the comments of Pope Francis, mm-hmm. and has labeled him a Marxist, or right. essentially said, it seems as though it's looking like Marxism. And
right.
that's where the Catholic has to kind of stand back and say, no, wait a minute, not to necessarily accept that particular viewpoint. And in this area, this really does need to be catechized better, doesn't it?
It really does. And that kind of comment and our reception of that kind of comment is exactly what we're both talking about right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
That any comment from a pope or a bishop that challenges certain assumptions we have about the way we should live our lives or dispose of our wealth or treat the person around us is immediately viewed as suspicious. That's not the way it's supposed to be. In fact, reflexively, we should take a teaching of the Church as challenging our own assumptions. That should be our posture, of submission to the authority of the Church as a teacher. And to learn from that. This is not to say every utterance of the Church will be correct, but it will be the case that these things ought to challenge the way we view the world. Pope Francis is no Marxist. Pope Francis also, though, is no American, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody from another part of the world who we believe is moved by the Holy Spirit and is speaking in a way that ought to be challenging certain assumptions any of us makes, no matter where we live, about our relationship to other people and about our relationship to things.
Joseph, help us to understand basic principles on which all this teaching is brought forward. It's almost like the seed of it that begins to grow this gorgeous tree.
Right. Well, if you just look again at Rerum Novarum, right, which is the first of these documents in the tradition, it was provoked by concerns about the relationship of labor and capital, right? Owners and laborers. In particular, it was concerned that both the socialist response and the capitalist response at that point saw them as pitted against each other, that these were antagonistic elements that could not be in relationship to each other well. Pope Leo XIII challenges that view and says, no, these are not actually opposed or rivalrous things. Instead, they ought to have the same goal in mind, which is the health of the firm, the happiness of the employer and the happiness of the employee. There's some common ground then that should allow them to work together towards a better relationship between labor and capital. That's a kind of fundamental principle of Catholic social teaching. In addition to that, of course, or associated with that, comes the defense of private property against socialist claims that the way to resolve this tension is by dissolving private property and making everybody share in the ownership of the firm. the church rejects that view and says, instead, private property is a good, but it's a good that's limited by right use of that property. So already you see that the sort of kernel from which the whole tradition grows, this notion that there can be a harmonious relationship between employers and employees or labor and capital, and that harmonious relationship requires the appropriate understanding of the good of private property.
The ultimate goal in business, for the Christian in particular, and the Catholic, is not so much the profitability, but ultimately getting to heaven. It is our goal is to bring forth the kingdom of God right here today. And so that paradigm of what is the ultimate goal in what we do things, especially for the business person who is driven to produce and to benefit, hopefully, society as well as those who work with him, that has to be part of that core, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that these documents are more optimistic about all of this than perhaps our media might be or we might be based on media or movies. Most business people, most workers don't do what they do because they're driven by profit, right? They do what they do because they love to do the thing, whether it's teaching or making pizzas or, you know, producing cars or taking risks, right? They love to do those things, and they love to do them in part because they love to serve other people. They love to see how happy people are when they eat their pizzas or when they're learning the history they're teaching them or they're driving the cars, you know, that they're producing. It's most of us are not driven by profit, right? It's not to say profit is evil or profit is not a part of what, right, gets people up in the morning, but it's not really, right, the primary motivating factor here. It's instead what you're describing, a kind of service of others that, if done well, ought to, right, be an aspect of loving other people, which, of course, is the center of the Christian faith.
Big government, big business, it is something that the church warns us to beware of equally, or says, at the very least, there are concerns, pitfalls, that if you're not careful, could do damage not only to the person who is driving that, but to those around them.
One of the fundamental principles of Catholic social teaching is the principle of subsidiarity. And this is a principle that basically speaks to paying attention to the levels at which things are done in society. So, for instance, the church asserts rightly that the primary educators of children are parents, right? So in terms of subsidiarity, parents have the first responsibility for caring for the education of their children. The state, for instance, would be wrong to intervene and force or compel parents to educate children in certain ways, right? So subsidiarity, for instance, then would protect the right of parents to send their children to Catholic schools. Similar to this, then subsidiarity also recommends that there are certain kinds of things like the setting of prices or the payment of employees by their employers at the level of the firm itself. Right? Businesses are the first level responsible for the appropriate payment of wages, the setting of prices, and so on. Not the state. On the other hand, there are responsibilities that the state has that businesses could not have or families could not have. Of course, the most famous of these would be national defense. But it would not simply be that, right? It might be also protection of the environment. It might be the maintenance of roads and highways, right? So there's a kind of respect for the different levels at which things work in society. And then, of course, the corollary to that is the recognition that sometimes either the state or individuals or other levels might be tempted into taking on responsibilities that are not theirs. There's no a priori or sort of specific prescription as to how those things ought to work. They're going to be prudentially determined in different contexts. There are certain times at which the state is going to have to be taking on responsibilities it may not have had to take on in the past. or letting go of responsibilities that it had to take responsibility for. This is all a matter of sort of political decision-making and paying attention to the role of prudence.
Prudence and temperance and all those virtues play an important role in Catholic social teaching, doesn't it?
Of course, yeah. I mean, ultimately, the social teaching is the moral teaching of the Church applied to the areas of economics, business life, and even family life.
Terms that we hear often in the media, particularly recently, are words that surround justice, whether it's a just price, a just wage. Justice is one that I think it's important that we really understand and allow the Church to be the moderator of a discussion in that area.
That's right. The principle of justice, of course, is, you know, rendering to somebody what they are due, right, or what we owe them. And from the Christian perspective, the ultimate measure of that, of course, is giving to God what God is due, and that is our love, right? We give God our love to the extent that we're able. More immediately, then, we need to love other people in the way that they are due our love. That's the sort of coordinating principle of justice as Christians understand it. Now you get to much more, you know, much closer levels of specificity in the way we relate to each other with regard to wages and so on. We have obligations to people that are not set, for instance, merely by contract, right? Because, you know, for lots of reasons, people may sign a contract that is to their disadvantage, maybe out of desperation or urgency. The Church is telling us that the fulfillment of justice is not the fulfillment of that contract necessarily, right? We may owe more to that person than they even agree to, and justice would require us to give them that more. So a just wage, for example, has been telling us the justice of the wage is not set simply by a contract to which someone might agree. It's set instead by what we owe that person based on their being a person.
These are so fundamental that really there can't be the separation of, say, this is who I am as a person over here as a Catholic that goes to church on Sunday. This is how I live it out, my family. But then I go into the work setting and that needs to be separated, because there's something,
right,
something that happens to us as the human person when we have to do that almost schizophrenic type of split, isn't there?
That's right. It's a real, in a sense, violence to our lives to think of religion as separated out of our daily life. You know, that it's something that we attend to either, you know, for the hour-long mass on Sundays or in some other respect, maybe praying over dinner or something. Now, the church's position on this, and really the position of any faith, would be that faith needs to be integrated into the way a person lives his or her life. And if it's not, it's not only bad for their spiritual life, it's bad for them as human beings. They're going to be schizophrenic, as you implied. They're going to be living sort of double lives, and that's not good for anyone.
You know, we're not saying that businesses shouldn't try to make a profit. Making profit is not in itself an evil, is it?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, it would be inconceivable, right? How would one run a business without profit? Instead, I think what the Church is saying is something like the pursuit of profit is compatible with the pursuit of living well. When a person is prioritizing profit over other goods, he or she will not be living well. And when a person is pursuing a life well lived, they will be pursuing typically a profitable enterprise. The things are compatible. Faith and business life are compatible with each other. The pursuit of profit is compatible with the pursuit of living well. In fact, as Andrew has pointed out on more than a few occasions, there's lots of empirical studies that show companies that run the way Catholic social teaching recommends companies to run generally flourish. They don't atrophy. They don't fail. They generally do very well.
it's also incumbent upon us as the consumers of whatever it is that the business is offering to us, whether it could be said even in a medical field or in an academic setting, as well as those products that we see, that we as consumers be discerning and respond. I guess where I'm going with this is that it's difficult when we're willing to, because we want to pay the cheapest price, that, and we want to get the best deal, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but if we're entering into purchasing products that are manufactured in a way we know is not just, then we, in some ways, contribute to that ongoing injustice. Is that fair to say?
It is. It certainly is. And one of the key aspects of what you said was our knowledge of those things, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
The economy is enormously complex, right? And most of us are trying to stretch our paycheck from, you know, one day to, you know, the next month. And, you know, we go buy shoes for our children or clothes or food. We're really looking for the best deals. And you know, it's hard to imagine approaching any of that any other way.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, when we're aware of either the immoral practices of certain businesses or the immorality of certain products, we need to have that awareness, that knowledge, inform our decision making. We become, in essence, responsible for the justice of our actions at that point because of our knowledge. So we may need not to buy one brand as opposed to another, or one product as opposed to, foregoing certain kinds of products. That's all contained in not only our church teaching, again, but just knowing that this is how we should live our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is difficult, again, because most of us are trying to maximize our dollars and provide for our families what we believe will make them happy. And, we are aware that cheaper shirts are made places where people get paid less money than they would otherwise. But we don't have disposable wealth to say, okay, we'll pay double the price for a shirt in order to avoid those labor practices. These are hard things. And again, there's no magic prescription here. When somebody looks in the book, they're going to see questions like this, and they're going to see that the church doesn't say, don't do this, do that. Instead, they're going to be led to less specific statements that require prayer, that ought to inform the conscience and lead to a decision rather than make the decision for the person.
Now, I'm so glad you said that, because I think ultimately when we are challenged with these type of decisions, to be able to enter into prayer and even go to the school of prayer, which is our parish, to receive those gifts, as it were, that help us to be able to discern and to be able to navigate properly and morally within the culture, that's something that hopefully is not being underutilized.
It is. It is. And the book is no substitute for any of that. In fact, again, Andrew and I both hope that the book is another instrument for leading people back to this kind of discernment, the process of reading, praying, thinking, talking, and then praying some more, and then making decisions. The book even describes the kind of five-step process for how the book ought to be used. And, the first step is find the question, look at the text, perhaps go read some more, pray, speak with your pastor, speak with your friends, speak with people whom you respect. It's not a prescriptive book. It's not, here's your question, okay, here's your answer.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's a part of a catechetical process, or a process of growing in faith, hopefully.
I just have to say, whether it's the section on finance and investing or the area of international business, but also that the section on marketing and sales, that one mm-hmm. is an eye-opener. But again, I keep going back. Anyone could read this book. Any Catholic could read this.
Agreed. The staggering thing about putting together the book for Andrew and me, and I think our research as well, is how much the church has said about the economic life. It's almost exhaustive in terms of the subject the church has addressed. The book, it's a very thin volume, you know, which is intentional. We wanted to make it something that people could carry with them and make use of frequently. The book, as that thin volume, is probably, I don't know, 1/25 of what is out there, maybe even more than that. There's so much there, and we do recommend that if you're provoked by a passage when you're looking at a question, go to the text itself. Go see how that passage works in the body of the document, whether it's an encyclical or a pastoral letter or the Vatican II Constitution or something. There's much more there than we even put in the book.
Yeah, it is just absolutely, I think, a must for anybody who is in a business, runs a business, works for a business, particularly in the American culture, because we are driven by almost every issue you have in here.
That's right. You know, one of the things Pope John Paul II said was, modern man has to worry about being treated as an economic man. And in many ways, as you know, again, just sort of suggested, we really are. You know, so much of our lives is driven by money concerns. Now, we have to resist that on the one hand, but on the other hand, it points to the utility of a book like this. Anyone really can pick it up, we hope, and profit from it.
I'm reminded of the late wonderful priest, Father Richard John Newhouse, who said, in these discussions, the church should be the moderator.
Right.
And I think that's what was so wonderful about this book, because you've allowed the church to be the moderator of the debate.
Well, thank you so much. With the second edition, then we'll get you to endorse the book with that with that paraphrase. Well done.
Well, it is. It's just outstanding. I couldn't, again, recommend it more highly. A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. Joseph, any final thoughts?
No final thoughts except my gratitude for having me on today. It was a lot of fun.
Well, it was a delight to have you on as well. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
With Dr. Joseph Capizzi, we've gone inside the pages of A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to cuapress.cua.edu, the website for its publisher, the Catholic University of America Press. Or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.